Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona, a lot of people are wondering what's going on with regional center reauthorization.
Mark, it's been such a critical time in the EB5 landscape. Today, we have a number of people who are going to give us updates on all that's been happening, especially with regional center reauthorization.
That's right, Mona. It's been a busy few days, and we have quite a few updates from a variety of sources. So let's get into it.
We thought it would be better to have a balanced perspective and not to have anyone from either of the major camps. So we chose a couple of speakers who've already been on our show. We're delighted to welcome you guys back. Sam Odani from ILW.
Delighted to be here, Mona.
And then we have Rajveer and Ishan from the American Immigrant Investor Alliance. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us here.
Before we jump into all of the new things which have been happening, I'm going to request your sources. Where are you getting the information from? So that at least our listener knows from the beginning that we have really legitimate sources and that we are just not making this information up.
Sam Odani, you've been real vocal about this. Why don't you go first?
I mean, look, I've been observing every single legislative significant legislative endeavor connected to immigration on the floor of Congress since 1996, 1997, perhaps. So it's been a long time, about 25 years. And there are times when I don't know what the weather is like outside my window, but I do know if something's happening on the floor on an immigration bill. We have a number of sources on Capitol Hill who keep us advised as a responsible newspaper. We cultivate over the years many sources, and we usually, all the sources that we talk to usually want confidentiality, but we have multiple sources, so we cross-check the information, and only when it comes through as from many different sources do we consider that as reliable.
That's important to know, Sam, because you do relay it to many people who rely on your information.
Sure. And I mean, our record is public. People can go ahead in our archives and check. And we have made our share of errors. But as far as forecasting congressional issues on EB5 is concerned, I'm sorry to tell you, but we have 100% track record for the last 7, 8, or 9 years. And the reason why I'm sorry is because it puts a tremendous amount of pressure. I'd rather be 95% correct. 100% is a little bit too much pressure, you know?
Yeah. So Rajveer, Ishan, you guys are doing a tremendous job with the American Immigrant Investor Alliance. For any of our new listeners who haven't heard a previous podcast, I do urge you to go back and listen to their podcast because it's tremendous. So tell me, where are you getting your information from?
We have hired a lobbyist, AIIA. It's Bruce Morrison, former member of Congress from Connecticut and former chairman of the Immigration and Citizenship Subcommittee in the House. So that's our direct line to Congress. In addition to that, we have multiple sources within the industry, and we cross-check and verify all the information we receive so that all your listeners are getting accurate information.
Wonderful. So listeners are like, okay, enough. Tell us what's going on. Who wants to go first?
Ishan here. Where we stand today is, the program has lapsed, and we're waiting for the Regional Center Reform Bill to go through Congress and become into law. There's two obstacles, really, that we see that need to be crossed in order for this to become law. One is that Congress needs to be okay with the Regional Center Reform Bill. The people involved, the main players, need to essentially give their consent with the reform bill. And alongside that, we also need a legislative vehicle to attach this bill to.
This is Rajveer here. We are at step zero at this point. No one in Congress has actually given consent to the industry reform bill at this point, and we don't have a vehicle at this point. And the reason isn't because there is any delay on the part of the industry. It's just because Congress is busy with much bigger things. So you have reconciliation, you have the infrastructure package, you have the debt ceiling, and Congress is busy with all of that, which makes sense. EB-5, in the grand scheme of things, is not that big. It's not a priority for Congress.
We like to think so, but you're right. It's a very small little pebble in the on the beach.
I'm with you, Mona. I kind of like our small, secluded beach.
If I can jump in here, what I would like to say is that if following the agenda that Mona had laid out, let's look at the overall legislative landscape, because the EB-5 reform language has to eventually fit into where the, you know, where it stands in the landscapes.
Could you describe that landscape for us, Sam?
As Rajveer mentioned, we have the debt ceiling where the full faith and credit of the United States government is on the line. Once again, they are playing chicken with that. It would be catastrophic if something were to happen to that. And we all hope that nothing will happen and we will come to the edge like we have come many times and then, you know, back away from the edge. We have the infrastructure package, which is a gigantic $1 trillion plus piece of legislation with goodies lit up like a Christmas tree for all kinds of lobbyists on Capitol Hill. And then we have an even bigger social spending package, which has the Democratic wish lists that couldn't be squeezed into some other vehicle. All of it kind of come to Congress. And I was trying to find a polite term, and I had to use a thesaurus to describe what this means and what this is like. This is truly unusual. We haven't had a situation like this in Congress for at least 10 years. I call it a logjam or a train wreck, or perhaps a slightly less polite term would be a cluster foxtrot. The point is that it is a very bad situation in Congress, and this is going to consume all the oxygen in the room and then some for some time to come. Now, any kind of EB-5 reform, any kind of issues to do with immigration would have to go through the appropriations package, and we have some news on that front. And this is the news that we have, and which is very important because eventually that's what everyone is aiming for, which is a change in EB-5 through the appropriations bill. Now, the Senate chairs of this of the appropriations committee are Senators Leahy for the Democratic side, and his counterpart, the ranking member, is Senator Shelby on the Republican side. They have worked together many times, and there have been many times when their roles were reversed. So they're very, very competent and respected legislators in their parties. They are relied upon to get the very important and hard work and the biggest job that Congress ordinarily does, which is to see, you know, which is to get appropriations done. And they, as of yesterday, were publicly disagreeing with each other. That doesn't happen too often, but that shows you that they were disagreeing even on getting a continuing resolution in place after December 3rd. They're both completely agreed that as of December 3rd, they do not expect to have come anywhere close to completing the appropriations process. In fact, they had barely begun. And so they know that there is going to have to be something after December 3rd to prevent another government shutdown, which nobody wants. But they are at completely total loggerheads right now on how to proceed, even with the continuing resolution. Mr. Shelby has offered a continuing resolution all the way through September 30th. And Mr. Leahy obviously wants something shorter, perhaps in the region of a month or two.
Give us a prediction, Sam. What do you think is going to happen?
My guess, this is my guess again, and this is my guess is based upon previous behavior of Congress when there was a disagreement between people as powerful and as influential as Shelby and Leahy. My guess is that we are going to see a continued resolution through approximately Easter. So it won't really be April 15th or so. It would be probably March 15th, and then they will kick the can down the road a few more times. And ultimately, they are aiming for an appropriations package to go through somewhere before Easter is my best guess. And out of the entire appropriations package of a dozen plus bills, the last bill that usually gets done is the DHS appropriations bill. So we're looking at a tremendous delay in getting DHS appropriations done. And that is my summary of the legislative landscape.
Wow. Rajveer, Ishan, not to have EB-5 regional centers back until next April is devastating.
If you look at the newsletter AII published a couple of days ago, that's exactly what we said. We do not expect a DHS appropriations bill this calendar year. We said maybe February, March, even April, if Sam is saying that.
So we have two independent, knowledgeable sources that are predicting spring of 2022.
Yes, I totally agree with Sam's painting of the scenario.
And interestingly enough, as the second we're recording this right now, a video was released by a certain member of the industry, basically echoing the same exact thought.
So now that's three independent sources that are basically pointing at the same time frame, spring of next year.
saying that, I know that both of you have been working very hard on that piece of legislation to at least grandfather the existing investors. What's happening with that?
At this point, Congress wants the EB-5 industry to have a consensus, to be united, because historically, that hasn't been the case.
Well, if that's not the pot calling the kettle black.
As AIIA, we don't want to do anything to derail that process. So our plan A is definitely supporting the reform bill the industry has put forward and make sure that our language, the grandfathering language, is attached to the industry reform bill. If that doesn't happen, or if the reform bill is heading for a dead end, we are also making sure that FIFPA, our grandfathering bill, is put forward as a standalone measure. So existing investors are protected.
Wonderful. Does it look like it's going to go through?
At this point, the industry has a consensus. They have a wish list they have put forward in front of Congress. Members of Congress will be reviewing this bill over the coming months. They need consent from all the major stakeholders, Leahy, Schumer, Cornyn, all these stakeholders. And there's going to be additions and subtractions. The question is, after Congress removes all these provisions they're asking for, will the industry remain in consensus then? That's the question.
Our goal really is to continue to gauge the activity on the Hill and just be ready to push for a standalone bill. Because the reality is we won't know until the 11th hour. So if we don't prepare and get the work ahead of time and we and Congress members aren't aware of FIFPA, we're not going to be able to succeed. So the goal for us over these next few weeks and whatever time in December we have is to ensure that members of Congress are aware of the 80,000 immigrants that are affected by this lapse and can do something about it if and only if the regional center reform bill fails to be attached or it just fails to pass.
So just to recap, this really affects only the people who filed under the regional center program, which is the vast majority of EB-5 investors. And it really means that no adjudications are happening. And anyone who even has an approval is not even able to get their green card at the moment because of the program's lapse.
Right. Sam, how do you see this affecting the whole EB-5 ecosystem?
Well, before we get to the ecosystem, the key point to understand is I do have a forecast in terms of what will happen to the EB-5 reform language, and it's based upon past behavior of not only previous EB-5 efforts in Congress, but more importantly, the past behavior for other immigration benefits bills that have reached similar stages of enactment or lack thereof on the floor. So, you know, what I say might or might not be controversial, and Nishan and Rajveer might or might not agree with me, but I do, you know, I would like to take a minute or two to suggest what I think will be the course of action. And by the way, I support FIFPA, so there's no question that it would be a great idea in my mind if it were to become law. So please, I'm on the same page with Nishan and Rajveer as far as that is concerned, and that is true, I'm sure, for most of the industry. I have plenty of good company on that score. But let me explain. The reform language that is still being negotiated is still a matter, is still in flux, so we don't have a specific target. It's a moving target. But eventually, whenever it crystallizes, I believe a key component from Congress's point of view, not necessarily the industry's point of view, is that there is going to be a quota increase, an indirect quota increase by not counting derivatives.
That would be wonderful, Sam. If that would happen, that'd be a lot more extra visas.
Oh, absolutely. That is exactly the great benefit of this bill and also the main problem with it politically. What it means is that let's look at what happens when you have a large pie, when you triple the size of the industry, quadruple the size of the industry, then if you have a small slice of that large pie, you can still be doing pretty good. The problem happens if there is a small pie, then people start fighting over their slice. And the point is that I, as best as I know, and I have it on good authority, that progressive Democrats will object eventually to this backdoor increase of the EB-5 quota. And not because they have anything against it. It's because they want to make sure that their immigration priorities go first, especially including immigration benefits for the Dreamers, for Dream. And absent that, they will, like they've done multiple times in the past, they'll step up and kill that portion, just that portion of the EB-5 reform bill. But the moment they kill that portion, now you have a small pie and everyone starts fighting over the slice and the entire reform of effort. There's a good chance in my mind, based again on past experience, that it will collapse. And when that happens, And when you have a situation where, you know, hopefully FIFPA will make it into law, but short of that, what Congress may choose to do, simply because it's the most expedient option, is to, quote, kick the can, quote, unquote, down the road again and have a short-term regional center reauthorization, which would be kind of a backdoor way of ensuring that the folks in the backlog are kind of retroactively reauthorized and processing can begin again at USCIS.
Sam, I've heard that there's at least two members of Congress who are against another short-term resolution without any changes.
Well, certainly Mr. Grassley and Mr. Leahy have often gone on the floor and loudly protested that the kicking the can down the road is a lousy idea. I'm not suggesting there is anybody who wants to kick the can down the road in Congress. I'm saying that once we reach a point where the industry consensus has collapsed, that will be the path of least resistance. So all I'm doing is following, you know, Sherlock Holmes' dictum that once you've eliminated all the other possibilities, the only remaining one is the one that's going to happen, not because it's the best one, but simply because that's the only remaining one.
What are your views on that, Ashan?
So according to our lobbyist, yes, the appetite in Congress for a short-term extension of the program is very little. We don't think a short-term extension is likely to happen at all. But actually, I want to ask you a question, Sam. So based on what you just said, are you basically hinting that industry infighting is really the reason why we're not going to get a reform bill through?
Eventually, not now. Right now, the industry is united and is singing Kumbaya. So that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's wonderful. And I think that kind of state of affairs is possible only when you expand the EB-5 quota. The moment you take the EB-5 quota increase off the table, I would be surprised if the industry doesn't start clashing over the small pie and everybody wanting a slice of that small pie.
You know, Sam, I think that's it's great that you said that. I think it's really important that the listeners hear this because a lot of times I come across investors and immigrants who say, why is the U.S. government causing this issue? Why isn't Congress ensuring that my rights are being protected? And I often have to explain to people that, hey, it's not really Congress that's at fault here. There's a lot more history to it. This is a battle that's been ongoing for the last 5, 6, 7 years. It's been happening since even before a lot of us even invested. So I think it's important for the world and for investors to know that key industry players which are really preventing the reform bill from going through.
Sam, we mentioned this exact same point in our newsletter a couple of days ago. We said that the success of the reauthorization effort depends on how flexible the industry remains, even when Congress does not agree to the key demands. And I was hinting at the derivative relief, all that stuff you're talking about.
Or the TEA definitions.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to the TEA definitions, and Ishan and Rajveer. I think that really is going to be the crux of it, not necessarily the derivatives.
Well, let me put it this way. No, they are both related to each other, Mona. If the quota is very large, then even with a liberal TEA definition, both sides can have plenty of investments for their favorite projects and for their favorite parts of the country. It is when the TEA definitions become an issue when the quota is small, then now the TEA definitions become critical. So both of these issues are two sides of the same coin, and they are related in this way.
I would just say, as a student of political science, I 100% agree with Sam that Congress is not going to make a special exception for EB-5 for visa relief while there are DACA dreamers waiting in line.
Exactly.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Either everyone gets visa relief or no one gets it. EB-5 is not an exception.
Let's take a look at like one of the clauses too that one of the factions has been fighting for, which is the issuance of advance parole and EADs to people with approved I-526s. If something like that was to ever pass, can you imagine what the feedback would be from people who are stuck in the FB or the other EB categories? If we give this privilege to EB-5 investors, I could easily see other immigrants in line being like, all right, so the rich people are getting this extra perk. Why aren't we getting this immigration benefit too?
Sam, having looked at all of this, what do you see as the effect in the whole EB-5 ecosystem right now?
Firstly, lawsuits are going to start flying. They're not going to wait for Easter. I think lawsuits are going to start flying in December and going to start flying thicker than snow in January.
Okay, lawsuits right? Against who? Who's suing who?
Everybody is going to sue everybody else. It's a great time to be a litigation lawyer for sure. Then USCIS, I think that's a very key point. I'm not sure that they are going to be happy continuing to hold these files in abeyance. They may decide at some point that they can't hold them in abeyance. And that's, if that's the case, then all hell will break loose at that point. So we'll see how your CIS wants to handle it. This is certainly going to damage the EB5 market. This is not a cost-free fight. This is not just a scuffle between friends. This is causing long-term damage to the market. PoolDirect is the bright spot. Oh my goodness, this is the golden era of PoolDirect. If you have a PoolDirect project right now and you're not getting fully subscribed, my goodness gracious, something's wrong somewhere, because we're seeing project after project after project in PoolDirect get oversubscribed quickly within weeks of launch. Large RCs are the losers. Their market shares are going down because they are loan-based. They, in many cases, cannot come up with a JCE and a direct PoolDirect offering. So they're losing market share. They're bleeding in terms of their influence and their pipelines. And finally, business plan writers and structuring attorneys are backed up. I mean, there is an enormous number of people who want to structure projects right now. And these folks are overwhelmed. They're working nights, weekends, charging premium fees, and are barely able to get the job done. So, you know, the effects are tremendous. This is not a, we're not just all on a holding pattern and waiting for the regional centers to come back. I mean, this thing is having real effects right now.
Ishan, Rajveer, can you comment?
I'll just comment on the point about USCIS maybe starting to deny applications already in advance. If that starts to happen, I would say sitting political Congress always acts when there's a crisis. If that starts to happen and USCIS starts to deny more than 35, 40,000 pending petitions and starts giving notices of removal to people already on adjustment of status in the U.S., I think that's when Congress will act on something like grandfathering or protecting existing investors.
But we don't want it to come to that. I mean, the hope is that we can circulate the language ahead of time and not have to do it once the negative impacts start. I'll also respond to something that Sam said, you know, about how these are the glory days for direct pool. And, you know, I work for an employer that does regional center projects and is now, you know, doing direct pool projects. And we're one of the first, like, institutional grade issuers doing so. I will say that, yes, this is the glory days for direct pool. At the same time, I think it's important for investors to realize that you can't structure a direct pool project as safely or as low a risk as we could, say, a regional center project. I'm a regional center investor myself, and I'm biased towards the regional center program. I think it's far better than the direct program in a lot of ways.
Well, that's a conversation, Ishan, for another podcast, because it is the fact that you are looking at operational jobs and stuff. But I think that we'll get into deep water if I start arguing with you on this at this point. But the bottom line is that all of this infighting and whatever is happening is certainly not giving the U.S. A good reputation overseas.
It's affecting foreign direct investment in this country for sure.
Yeah.
No question. I mean, if people get the idea that, you know, they are risking everything, their futures, forget about the money. I mean, they're risking their families' futures in Congress is treating them cavalierly, regardless of whether that cause of that cavalier treatment originates in Congress or originates in disagreements amongst players in the industry. The fact is that, you know, from the point of view of somebody 3,000 miles away, 5,000 miles away, 7,000 miles away, all they hear is, America is taking me for a ride. They're doing a bait and switch on me.
Yeah.
And nobody feels good to be in that situation.
It's not all bad news, though. While the industry is working hard to make sure that we have a reform bill through, AIIA, we are doing our own work. We are doing our work to socialize FIFPA, our grandfathering bill. For example, we have already received assurances from IIUSA and the Rural Alliance that if the reauthorization bill were to fail, we hope it doesn't, that they would push for and support our grandfathering language. Additionally, we have received assurances from, I would say, multiple Senate offices that they understand and agree to the concept of grandfathering as a standalone and as part of the reauthorization package. And we're going to do more work in the weeks and months ahead to make sure that existing investors are protected.
Well, that's good to hear, Rajveer. I suppose this is the consequences of having a democracy, Mark, right?
You're right. Democratic justice is a double-edged sword. And although it seems like reauthorization is coming spring of 2022, it sounds like we can expect some lawsuits between now and then. Rajveer, Ishan, Sam, thank you so much for joining us on this update on EB5 Investment Voice.
Delighted.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, pleasure as always.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.